Hi, I'm Perry, and this is Chemist Corner. Hello, and welcome to Chemist Corner, the program dedicated to helping you become a better creator of cosmetic products. I'm Perry Romanowski. This is day 14 of our series, 30 Days to Become a Better Cosmetic Chemist. On today's program, I'm going to finish our segments on the main type of cosmetic raw materials by talking about claims ingredients. Back on the second day of this 30-day series, we explained how all the cosmetic raw materials can be grouped into three categories, including functional, aesthetic, and claims ingredients. As you'll remember, functional ingredients are the ones that make the cosmetic product works, and the aesthetic ingredients are the ones that make the formulas look and feel better. Claims ingredients are added to formulas specifically to support the marketing story. Most people outside the cosmetic industry are unaware that claims ingredients exist. When they see ingredients featured on the label or in advertising, they firmly believe that those ingredients are the important ones to the functionality of the product. But the consumers are wrong. There are lots of ingredients added to cosmetics that have no function other than to support the marketing story. These ingredients may, or they may not, have some theoretical functionality, but are usually not superior in function to other materials in the formula. They are also expensive ingredients, which makes it cost prohibitive to add them at levels that might exhibit some functionality. Nearly every cosmetic company uses claims ingredients because they help differentiate their products from a competitor and they compel people to buy. The main reason claims ingredients are added is because consumers like story ingredients. They like products that contain feature or claims ingredients. They buy products that contain feature ingredients. Right now, the hottest ingredient in hair care is argan oil or Moroccan oil. Consumers are clamoring to buy products with argan oil in them. However, if you look at these formulas, they are filled with silicones with just a splash of actual argan oil. Claims ingredients move products. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back to our definition of claims ingredients. We'll talk about how they are used, then finish with some example of claims ingredients. I'll also talk about how you can figure out for yourself if an ingredient is just a claims ingredient or it has some actual function in your formula. Claims ingredients, sometimes called fairy dust or foo-foo dust, there are ingredients that are added to a formula at low levels for the primary purpose of listing the ingredient name on the label. Typically, they are used in formulas at levels of 0.5% or less. It's actually more like 0.01%. In the US, there is no minimum amount of an ingredient that you have to put in your formula before you can claim that it is in there. As long as you actually put some of an ingredient in your formula, you can list it on your label. And that's why these ingredients are in the formula in the first place, to be listed on the label. The types of ingredients that serve as claims ingredients can vary, but the ones that make the best choice are ones that are recognizable by consumers or sound good to them. The most common claims ingredients are natural extracts, vitamins, proteins, some types of biotechnology ingredients, or even fanciful made-up ingredient names. They are not put in the formulas to have any measurable effect, and almost invariably, they don't. Let's talk about these ingredients a little more in depth. We'll begin with vitamins. Of all the marketing ingredients, vitamins are the best known and liked by consumers. Most consumers already believe that vitamins are good for their health, so it's not a stretch for them to believe that vitamins in their cosmetic products are a good thing. Unfortunately, with a few exceptions, vitamins have not been demonstrated to have a significant impact on the condition of skin or hair. They just don't. They are primarily added to formulations to support marketing stories, and at that, they are effective. In fact, I've been in consumer focus groups where the simple addition of the phrase, with vitamins, turns a low-scoring product concept into a high-scoring product concept. The main vitamins used in cosmetics include vitamins A, B, C, D, and E. While most vitamins have almost no impact on the performance of a personal care product, there are a couple exceptions. Vitamin A is one exception. Vitamin A is derived from beta carotene and is part of a more general class of ingredients called retinoids. This includes ingredients like retinoic acid, retinaldehyde, and retinol. These retinoids have some function on skin, but the most functional is retinoic acid. In fact, it is so good at treating skin conditions that in the U.S. it's classified as a drug and you need a prescription from a doctor to use it at effective levels. Other retinoids have demonstrated some minor effects with reducing wrinkles and removing age spots. However, they are not nearly as effective, which is why they are considered claims ingredients. Consumers believe that vitamin A works, so many cosmetic companies put a low, non-functional level of it in their formulas just to be able to make the claim that vitamin A is in their formulas. The next type of vitamin commonly used in cosmetics is vitamin C. It is a proven antioxidant whose chemical name is ascorbic acid. Vitamin C has definite health benefits when ingested in food, but its effects, when topically applied, are less proven. Since it is so well known, consumers find it easy to believe that vitamin C has beneficial effects in their cosmetic formulas. And indeed, there is some evidence it can reverse UV damage caused by sun exposure. However, vitamin C is a water-soluble ingredient that quickly oxidizes when placed in water-based formulas. So if you are using a water-based cosmetic with vitamin C, you can be certain that it is not functional by the time it gets to the store shelves. The fact that it is non-functional by the time the consumer buys it makes it a claims ingredient. Vitamin E is another commonly used vitamin. It belongs to a class of compounds called tocopherols, and it is a potent antioxidant. While there is some evidence that when applied topically, it can have some beneficial effects on the skin, like moisturization, increasing skin softness, and increasing skin smoothness, it doesn't work better than standard moisturizing ingredients like petrolatum or mineral oil. But consumers like the vitamin E better than petrolatum, or so both are used. They like the name better anyway. They might not like the functionality better. You get the functional benefits from petrolatum while you get the marketing punch from vitamin E. The claims ingredients really work at their best when they're combined with formula ingredients that actually have a great benefit. The final vitamin we'll cover is vitamin B5, also known as panthenol. And in the lab, you can show that this ingredient works as a moisturizing ingredient. It is a humectant and has the ability to absorb a good amount of water. But there are other ingredients that can do this better, so formulators use these ingredients and then include a small amount of panthenol to market the products. I remember when I was formulating, I had a 4-ounce jar of panthenol, powdered panthenol, which was a pretty expensive ingredient. We used it as a claims ingredient in one of our formulas. Anyway, I wondered just how good a formula would be if I used 5% panthenol. So I did a test. I made a conditioner batch, and to a small portion of the batch, I incorporated 5% panthenol. It went into the formula fine, as the ingredient is water-soluble. Anyway, when I tested the two formulas on a blind basis, I didn't notice any differences. That exercise really convinced me that as far as making a noticeable difference in performance, panthenol really does nothing. There are a number of other vitamins we could mention, but the story with these is pretty much the same. There is some weak lab evidence that they have an effect, but they don't have any noticeable difference when applied topically to your formula. Perhaps the most common of these marketing ingredients are botanical extracts. It makes sense because consumers generally have a positive view of plants, and there is a lot of folkloric information supporting their use. Unfortunately, there is very little scientific evidence, and these ingredients have beneficial effects when used in products like skin creams or hair products. While anecdotal evidence for their effectiveness abounds, there are very few botanical extracts that have been shown to do anything beyond moisturization. This effect can be nice, but from a formulation standpoint, it makes more sense to use an ingredient with the best moisturizing effect and in the most efficient way, and then add a small amount of a botanical extract to support the marketing story. This is what most often happens. If ingredients could be shown to be more effective than other ingredients, they would be used more. But so far, the evidence is just not there. It's very difficult for something to moisturize better than, say, petrolatum. An herbal extract of pretty much any plant can you can imagine, is available, so you can support any kind of marketing story that you want. They are typically supplied as solutions of the extract in a solvent like propylene glycol or butylene glycol, which is one of the main reasons you find those ingredients also on the label. It's a good, cheap solvent for extracts. Another kind of popular claims ingredient found in cosmetic products are proteins. Most commonly are hydrolyzed proteins derived from plants. Proteins are incredibly versatile ingredients and are the primary construction of all living things. They are complicated polymers made up of amino acids. When in their native states, they can create structures like hair, lungs, the heart, or blood. However, when they are used in cosmetics, they are typically chemically hydrolyzed to break down their natural structure. The result is straight chains of amino acids and essentially removes any kind of activity the protein had. Hydrolyzed proteins work as humectants and emollient ingredients, but that's about it. There are some lab evidence that certain proteins may help to increase the strength of hair or nails, but that evidence is kind of weak. Formulators would not expect proteins to have a significant impact on the way that their hair products function. They are typically added to the formula because they look good on an ingredient label. Look, when you have a hair care product and you want it to convey the idea that it's going to soften hair and make it feel nice, you put in silk protein. But the silk protein isn't really doing anything except supporting the story. While vitamins, extracts, and proteins have been used in cosmetics for a long time, the incorporation of biotechnology is relatively new. Brands are now featuring things like superoxide dismutase, recombinant protein, growth factors, epigenetics, and even stem cells. Unfortunately, this represents some of the worst in cosmetic marketing, in my opinion. For example, I recently read a story about a new skincare product that incorporates both plant and human stem cells. This type of marketing is a bit annoying because it's completely misleading. There aren't stem cells in the product, no matter what the company claims about the skin cream. Staying on the topic of stem cells, you might wonder how I can say that with such confidence. All you have to do is know a little about the science of stem cells, and you'd know that stem cells, whether plant or animal, are not going to remain viable in any cosmetic formula. It's hard to keep stem cell cultures alive, you know, in the lab, let alone in cosmetic formulas with no environmental regulation or even food source. The reason companies put biotechnology in cosmetics is because it impresses consumers. One article called it science-ploitation, and they're right. Unfortunately, you can blind consumers with science. As a formulator, this is unfortunate, but we generally have to do what the marketing people want. On some level, it is still up to the consumer to avoid being fooled. However, sometimes formulators are fooled too. Raw material suppliers are pretty good at marketing their raw materials to formulators who are hungry for functional ingredients. As a formulator, it is your job to sniff out these exaggerated claims and really determine if a cosmetic raw material works or not. So we will finish off today's show by answering the questions. How do you know if a cosmetic raw material really works? Or is it a claims ingredient, or is it really a new functional ingredient? All right, so how do you know if a cosmetic raw material really works? First, be skeptical, but open-minded. It's hard to make something new that really provides noticeable benefits. That is why there are so few new functional raw materials. The new raw material you are presented by your friendly supplier probably doesn't work as claimed. This is because it is an easy matter to give you only the evidence that supports what they want to tell you when they're trying to get you to buy something. So your initial position of any new raw material should be one of skepticism. However, you don't want to filter out too much, or you might miss some great opportunity. If the claims of the new raw material are impressive, by all means test that raw material and use it at the maximum level suggested by the supplier. If you can't see a difference at that level, it's unlikely you'll ever see a difference. Second, get some independent testing. While the test data from a supplier is a good start, you should never rely on supplier testing to prove a claim. They have an incentive to find information that supports the product that they are selling. I'm not suggesting they make up data. However, they certainly aren't going to show you negative data. I like independent data generated in-house or by an out-of-house independent laboratory. Third, do some blind testing. An important rule of science is to not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person in the world to fool. If you want to believe in a raw material, you'll find data to support that belief. Conversely, if you don't want to believe in a raw material, you'll find data to support that belief too. That doesn't lead you to the truth. When evaluating a raw material for a claim, you should do a double-blind study. To do this, it helps to have a technician who can label the samples for you, do all the testing, and then give you the data for analysis. Claims ingredients are important to include in your formulas because they help your marketing people build a compelling story that consumers are more likely to buy. And while some of these ingredients may have an effect, it is almost always not as impressive as other more common options. To be certain, you need to test ingredients at the highest levels in a blinded fashion and prove whether they have an effect or not to yourself. You have to be the gatekeeper at your company when it comes to what really works. And don't forget, try not to fool yourself. Today's challenge. All right, there you have it, your introduction to claims ingredients. Since one of the key things you need to know to get better as a formulator are raw materials, today's challenge is similar to the other raw material challenges we've done. In this exercise, I want you to go over to drugstore.com or Ulta.com, or just use three or four different cosmetic products and get the list of ingredients. Copy those lists into a spreadsheet and see if you can identify which of the raw materials are the claims ingredients. Which ingredients could be left out of the formula, and they would essentially work the same way. If we go back to our Jergens Natural Glow Revitalizing Daily Moisturizer example, remember there were 31 ingredients. Now, only 5 of those were functional, 20 of them were aesthetic, which means 6 of the ingredients are purely claims ingredients. And for the curious, I've determined that they are the Olay Europa Fruit Oil, the Avena Sativa Kernel Extract, the Persia Gratamissa Avocado Oil, the Jojoba Seed Oil, the Calendula Officinalis Flower Extract, and Tocopherol. All right, now it's your turn. Find 3 or 4 ingredient lists, write down all the claims ingredients, and then after you're done, go to the comments section in the show notes and list the results of your exercise. First, list the product that you looked at, the ingredient list, and then the ingredients that you think are in there only for claims. I'll look through them and see how you did and leave my comments. Well, that's today's program. Thanks so much for listening. In tomorrow's program, I'm going to talk about cosmetic formulation. If you have found this series helpful, please go to the comments section and leave a comment. Also, be sure to share it with your friends and colleagues. As always, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or any other podcast playing service you use. Also, be sure to give us a review on iTunes. This will help others find the show. If you found these podcasts helpful, please share them with anyone else you know who might be interested. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, we're at Chemist Corner, and like us on Facebook. Additionally, we have a cosmetic science forum that I encourage everyone to sign up for. And you can participate in discussions, and you can get lots of your questions answered right there. That's at chemistcorner.com/cosmeticsciencetalk. Thanks again for listening. I'm Perry Romanowski. Now, go make a difference.